Nathan Buckley to take us a bit deeper on a Tuesday. Hello to you, Bucks.
Morning, Jared. How are you?
I'm well.
We were just talking about Melbourne, weren't we?
Yes.
Melbourne, the undefeated team, the premiers of last year. That's who we were talking about, was it? I didn't get the team.
It was Carlton.
It was Carlton.
We're taking Melbourne for granted, Bucks.
No, well, this is exactly what a team like Melbourne need. Like we talk about Melbourne and like, can they? You know, either, they're going to have a loss. They need to have a loss at some point, and they're so dominant, and obviously Brisbane who got beaten on the weekend. So you think, oh well, there's not the two's not there anymore. There's a big gap. So Melbourne are just out on their own. Who are the contenders? So they start focusing on that. Who can contend? And right now, Carlton are the it team. I think that's spot on. But this is exactly what a team like Melbourne need, because when do they play? When do Carlton play?
Not till the very end.
Yeah, okay.
It's such a shame. It's round 22.
Yeah, well, if it was in the next couple of weeks, we'd be talking about it flat out, wouldn't we?
Flat out. But there are these two. Yeah, we are going to get Melbourne Fremantle, which has lost a little bit of luster. Melbourne Brisbane is the one that we had been counting down to. But I just think Carlton has just grabbed the imagination in such a way, but we're going to have to wait forever.
Well, I think the Carlton Collingwood game on Sundays
is
going to be very interesting. I'm probably a little more bullish on Collingwood's upside this year than others, but I think that they've, you know, when their leaders stand up as they did on Sunday, and you get the right mix of youth and experience, they're a very good side. So I think that'll be a great contest.
The journey through the season. So the reference yesterday to Carlton is the team that has improved most within season. I was quoting you back to you.
Yeah. There you go.
Sam Mitchell last night said that they had learnt the lessons of getting overrun, and then you sit there and wait to see if they're going to be implemented. Brisbane, like, that's just a loss. You lose from Fremantle. Coach has got ahead of ourselves, got what you deserved. Is that journey, particularly through this part of the season, is, I imagine there are a few teams who are probably hanging out for the bye now. I expect you to do a bit of planning to the bye and then reset after that, and there's either one, two, or three to go.
Yeah, every team and club would have their own ebbs and flows, and it's largely invisible to the outside. And sometimes it's even invisible to the inside, because it only appears after the fact. So Fremantle the last couple of weeks, you know, wet games, yes, and we want to try and find reasons why things happen. They just haven't been on the edge as they were in the month leading up to the last couple of weeks. And Justin Longmuir spoke to, but getting ahead of themselves. And maybe that's in him a little bit as well. It's an open, he needs to own the whole organisation. He needs to own the performance and speak on behalf of it and drive the group around where their next challenge and their next opportunity to stand up is going to come. And right now he thinks it's managing expectations. He didn't go to the wet too much. I didn't hear that comment. That wasn't the one that resonated. The one that resonated is we got way too far ahead of ourselves. So the challenge now for Fremantle is to come back to what they know, and can they do that? And against the best side in the competition and perform.
What do you think that looks like when a team gets ahead of itself? Have you had first-hand experience of something that would fall into that category?
Not anecdotally, no, nothing that really stands out. I would suspect that most of that is done in retrospect, and sometimes it's a coaching tool around mindset, around not taking anything for granted. And it can happen on an individual standpoint. If a young player reaches heights that he has never reached before and then all of a sudden forgets to do the things that got him there, that does happen, and that is evident, and you can use that to find the next level of growth, the next level of sustainability and consistency, and that goes out to a team level, no doubt. But that conversation would be being had between the coach and the leaders in the last couple of days, and it will inform what they come back to, what they strip everything back to, the things that they believe may have been overlooked or weren't done as well when they perform as they have been the last couple of weeks for Fremantle. But every side is on that journey. Every team is on that journey. Every coaching panel is on that journey. Melbourne are on it. You know, How do they, like, they were, as you said, they cruised through the game against North. Did we ever think that there was, that the result was in doubt?
Nope.
And they just, I think Melbourne are probably the team that everyone, we all look at and we go, well, they have the capacity not to blow themselves up. So they get in that situation. And I mean, they've been in bigger challenge situations than that against better opposition, where it looks like, oh, this is a real contest. But then they just trust. They come back to what they know. They've practiced it over a long time now. And in 2 short years, from halfway through 2020 to now, they've become a team that you can rely on. And it doesn't matter what their ebbs and flows are. If they're ebbing low, they find a way just to come back to what their DNA is and then just do enough to win, no matter how good their opposition is. And that's not to be taken for granted.
Yeah. And you can't play. I think the lesson of sustained success, as we've seen it through the Hawthorn years, the Geelong years, the Richmond years, and I suspect we get it in the Melbourne years, is you can't play manic intensity every week. And you can tailor what you produce. You just have to beat your opponent on the other side of the ball. So you play... In golf terms, you would say you play the scoreboard. If you're leading by two, if you're chasing two, you play the scoreboard and get it in the shape that you want. And then it's not maximum exertion. I don't quite mean that because players exert themselves within
efficient.
The game.
It's efficient. Yeah. Well, watching the highlights of the Hawthorn and Brisbane back, Brisbane kicked the first 4 goals of the game, looked like they were over the top, and we could kick the first 3 very quickly, and you just thought, Brisbane are on. Like, if they roll through the next 15 minutes and they put a 6 or 7 goal buffer in this, it was 4-1. Tom Mitchell kicks a clutch goal from what in the end means one that keeps Hawthorn around the mark. By the end of the first quarter, the scores are relatively level, and Brisbane are thinking very differently the way they did 6 or 7 minutes into the game. So they've been on the road 4 times out of 5. They go down to Tassie. They're playing on another team's home deck, in a deck that they've played on quite a bit. Brisbane don't have a great record there. Yeah, they've travelled quite a bit. Their players are a little bit off. They're not quite as efficient or at the top level, and their ebb's coming down. Hawthorn have had a couple of quiet weeks, and their ebb's coming back up, and they found a way to find a bit of a spark and a bit of energy. Then the game's alive. And then we get a little bit of misfortune thrown in, free kicks, goals from free kicks. And then you get the result, a 5-point result that we didn't expect. I think Chris Fagan handled it really well. We've played some pretty good footy. We lost today. We gave too many goals away from free kicks. We'll move on. But you don't get caught up in the loss in the micro, because this is ebbs and flows. And they didn't quite get over the line. And Hawthorn were energised and competitive, and they were up for it. They were on the upswing, and Brisbane were a little bit flat.
So what's Carlton's ebb and flow, to dig a little bit deeper on yesterday's?
It's exponential at the moment, is it not? I mean, there's no modulation there. It's just, the line is tracking up. And I think that they're feeling themselves at the moment. I think that their buy-in is evident. The work rate that comes from that belief, I think they're getting the surge of adrenaline that teams get when they discover levels that they haven't been at for a while. Sam Fisher's played, on the wing as a midfielder. Now he's cutting his teeth as that small forward. He's getting up the ground and back as well as any. He's got some mates next to him. I really like their small forward crew. And if you look at Melbourne, I think they're Neil Bullen, Spargo, Sparrow. Those guys, they cover the ground as well as any, and they have a belief in their role in the team. And that's what I'm seeing from the Carlton small forwards. They get up and they help defend. The ball does not come back through the corridor, because they're there, and they defend it really well. So their defence know exactly where the ball's likely to go, and that's down the line. So they're a long way out and around. So there's a lot of things they're doing there, getting a lot of great validation from. And when you have that belief in your capacity and you still haven't maxed out yet, so you still want to chase that. You want to chase, how good can we be? Where do we stack up? How good can we make our brand of football? It's nearly like the opposition become irrelevant. They seem to me like they're really self-interested in where can we take this for us? You know, we know how we want to play, and we're getting this really good validation and feeling come back to us. And that's, you got to ride that, but that doesn't last forever.
Yep.
And you've got to, there's got to be something more sustainable underneath that. And you know, Carlton have got that challenge in front of them now as well, because it's never done.
So what would Michael Voss be working with at the moment? So the improvement that's been made during the season is what, I mean, he said coming into the year, we won't be the finished product. And there'd been a lot of talk about layers, and those layers are revealing themselves. I don't quite buy into the second half fade outs. I think they have made progress through that. I really like the way they played the back end of the Sydney game under challenge. They'd faced challenge and duress. They'd held on in sometimes dicey circumstances. They were much more convincing in the way that they held on, which suggested that they had been learning that scenario. They recognized it. They altered the way that they played. And then they've got, it wasn't just Wietering, it was Plowman, it was De Koning. They all sort of sensed their moments. So
Lewis Young standing up.
Yeah, yeah. So what's Voss honing in on at the moment to continue that improvement?
I think there would clearly be some mechanical elements to that, the what they're doing in the game and the way they want to set the ground up. Where they get there. Rests, you're talking about that with Melbourne. You know, it's not about maxing out all the time. It's about, okay, how high is your idle performance? And I think like the best teams have the, over a period of time, have the capacity to have an idle performance that is above most teams, potentially even above most teams' best performance. And so for instance, Brisbane were idling a little lower than normal on the weekend, but Hawthorn still needed to get past that, and they did. So they were up. So we got that result. That's not to denigrate Hawthorn either, because they're, in particular, their ball movement from the back challenges the best defences. So that's a pretty good weapon to have. But I get the sense with Vossi, he's just, I love that he's uttering straight after the GWS game, where he just said, you know, this was a milestone for us. It was a really good performance. And we've got to keep ticking these ones off. We're coming up against an opposition that, you know, we're emotionally charged with losing their coach. And we, no matter what happens going forward, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, you can't take away this moment, you know, this tick of the box that we've just had. And I just loved that attitude.
Yep.
And I get the sense that, yes, there'll be mechanical elements, but I just feel like he's just working really cleanly, and effectively with the relationships of the players, having them understand they're on a journey. There's plenty of things they don't know about yet that they want to discover together. There's going to be, you know, bumps and pitfalls along the road, but we're going to face those with, you know, open hearts and minds, and we're going to do that together, and that's going to make us stronger. Things are going well at the moment. We feel like we're on the upswing, but, you know, let's not take it for granted. I think there's a lot of that talk that seems to be coming out of Vossi's mouth, and I think it bleeds out authentically as well. So you're talking about a guy who has had a journey through football and learned a lot, a champion player, a favourite son who was perceived as failing as a senior coach, gone back around as an assistant coach, cut his teeth, going back to work again as only champions know how to do, and he's come back popped up at the right place at the right time, and he's getting the kudos that he deserves in that regard. But it's not just it's not just his character that's coming through. He's allowing all the other characters and personalities to pop up and pop through, and recognizing them consistently too. Talks about his coaching group, talks about his staff. It's just really nice to see, isn't it?
Yep.
I sort of just had a really Collingwood thought then. I'm sort of giving too much credit to Carlton. I just had that pop
come
up
back through
in
that
the back
the
of my head. But look, they need to get the credit, because they are doing a lot of things right, aren't they? And as you said back to me, and I said yesterday, I think they are the most improved, because I wondered whether they had those other layers to their game, and they're definitely showing that at the moment.
Nathan Buckley gets us underway on a Tuesday as we go a little deeper. 1-300-736-736. You can get involved. You can text on the Tempur-Tex machine, a mattress like no other. 0433 98 11 16. Bit of word association being played. Collingwood progressing. Carlton exciting with injuries looming. Tigers stalking. Freo need no worse than a soft five. There's a bit of vogue to Freo, Grant. And for you, is this week's Collingwood-Carlton game the biggest between the two clubs in 20 years? If Carlton wins, their fans will be right up and about. If Collingwood wins, we'll be saying, here come the Pies. So it just started to creep out of your subconscious there. Mm. Is the Collingwood-Carlton thing still real?
I think it has been. There's been a number of, well, absolutely. The modern day rivalry has been based on anything but on-field sort of challenge, I suppose, or success. It's these two teams haven't been up at the same time for a long time. I've got no doubt that it sits in the hearts and minds of the supporters. They still wear that. And I reckon by the time we get to Sunday afternoon, it'll be very interesting, because I've got no doubt that Carlton, we were just waxing lyrical about Carlton, and I think they're playing some really good footy. I did say only a couple of weeks ago that I thought they were vulnerable. And they're still going to be tested against the best opposition, but I think they'll be tested on Sunday. I think that'll be a really big challenge for Carlton. I think that Collingwood will be up and about. I think they've got a brand that will challenge any side when they execute it well. So and off the back of a really good road trip, there's some momentum there for Collingwood as well.
So did you induct young Collingwood players into the Carlton rivalry, hatred, whatever it is? Because it's not natural anymore that a kid growing up would see it, that like there's rivalries all over the place. West Coast and Collingwood played through your time a stirring set of games, and you know those finals appearances over time, dating back to, you know, the end of a game at Subiaco all the way through to a grand final. Is how do you keep it relevant? Something that lives in the soul of the two teams from the past.
Well, I think the relevance is more on the other side of the fence. Like it really is more in the supporter groups, because week in, week out, you're preparing to be your best, but you're preparing to take on the opposition. So whatever the opposition that you're facing, you look at their strengths, they're faceless. You look at their strengths, you look at their weaknesses, how they play, and you try and work out exactly how you are going to best them, best their best, with, and then get the game on your terms. I didn't go to the rivalry very often at all. We would often look to bring past players or people back into the environment, and that would bleed out of those players if we were heading into a Carlton game. And Nick Maxwell and his role, sort of leadership and culture, he would be looking to milk that as well. So that's where it would bleed in, and it wouldn't be front of mind. It wouldn't be it wouldn't be a really strong element in the preparation, but it would be there. You know, just on the edge of your consciousness, and there was someone would say like about the old days and this, that, and the other, and it bleeds through. But personally, it was never a big part of my preparation against Carlton. Yep. And we had a really good record over my time, you know, late as a player and then as a coach.
So if I asked you, so word association, who's the natural enemy? Go.
The natural enemy is Carlton. Yeah, okay. I've always Essendon was always high up there for me as well. But the natural enemy is, it depends when you were born. Yeah, because younger Collingwood fans would be saying West Coast after 2018. Yeah.
There'd be another group who'd be Brisbane Lions.
Correct, from that little part. But Carlton is always the Carlton. I saw it on the app, and I thought, wow, they play like when Collingwood were playing. I saw they were playing Carlton. I thought, that's something to look forward to. Like I will. I'm actually not sure if I'm in the game, but I'll be sitting and watching that. That's with real interest. You know, obviously some skin in the game on one side, but really interested in Carlton and how they're developing. I think that's a And it's not a bad time slot too, when everyone gets a chance to put the feet up in front of the fire and or get to the game and have a look.
There's a lot of great cultural stuff coming through, which I'll share with you in a moment. Shane's with us on the road. Welcome to you, Shane.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bucks, question for you, mate. Sydney seems to be a real enigma of a side at the moment. Their forward line and their forward structure is dysfunctional at best.
Mm.
Is it time that the Swans put Franklin into the Matty Richardson role and play him up the wing, and because he's probably our best field kick, and get the ball down into the hands? I mean, we seem to be a lot more structured when he's not in the forward line anymore.
Look, it's a great point, and obviously you're a Sydney man. They're not popping at the moment. They're not finding the synergy and connection, and then the what that brings to the team and to your performances. They look like they're really grinding it out. Although, John Longmire was actually talking about the fact that outside of the second, he didn't mind their contest and the way that they went about it, and probably was coming from a perspective of rating Carlton as an ongoing strength and the vibe that they're getting at the moment and the sort of football that they're playing. So, but I think Sydney are really, they've got some great attributes, but they're just not moulding together well as a team. Not as well as we have seen them in the past, and definitely not on the trajectory that we thought. Individually, young players are coming through, but they're just not playing great team footy at the moment.
Here's the cultural stuff, Bucks. I love this stuff. My two boys, 11 and 13, are very aware of the rivalry between Carlton and Collingwood. It's Dad's responsibility to teach them how much we hate Collingwood. Craig's in Black Rock. The rivalry is real. Mum always topped off a present to me with a bag of my favourite snacks, Mars bars. Mum stopped buying them when Mars sponsored the enemy, Dave. I won't even drink Carlton draft because of the word Carlton. Oh, it's real, Jared. It's real. Nicole's a Blues supporter. I probably can't read that line. It needs to be discussed at club level. Us supporters understand it and breathe it. That's from Benjamin. Another childhood memory, my Italian cousins and uncles, a mixture of feisty Collingwood and Carlton fans who took me to the 1988 qualifying final on a Sunday. Blues won by a few goals, but the crowd was enormous, up near 90,000. That's from Dom. Jared, losing the 100th and the 125th year games for Collingwood against Carlton still eats me. And it is real. It is very real. As a Collingwood supporter, it's about real footy hate. Can't wait for Sunday. Philip supports.
I wonder how many of those, and they're all great anecdotes because they are so real to the individuals that are sharing them. And that is, it can be a very visceral individual feeling.
Yep.
I wonder how many of those people understand that it started because Collingwood was a low-lying area and Carlton were a high-lying area, and Carlton's effluent and everything else used to run down that way, and they apparently used to be told about that. So this was a very suburban, like, about the lay of the land, about where you lived, about what your community was made up of or not made up of. That's where, you want to talk about where things start, that's where it starts. So Collingwood were always made to feel lesser by Carlton. Carlton always saw themselves as above. At least that's what I was learnt and told through the Collingwood experience over 125 years. So that is where it comes from. I wonder how many people that have shared their modern day, challenges and this is real, this is real. I wonder if they're aware of that, because that is the genesis of this rivalry over a long period of time. But I don't see how actually bringing that up to the playing group, it's in your history, it's in your induction, it's part of what you talk about the chip on our shoulder as an organisation, about where we began and how we were viewed and the community, how the community was viewed. But I don't see how that actually helps you go out and play a game of footy for a couple of hours. It definitely builds a connection to your history. But you don't do that against an opposition. You do it for yourself. But it is part of it. But it doesn't become part of the week as such. It's part of the ether that you're a part of and the culture that you develop.
Join in with us this morning. 0433 98 11 16. Temper, a mattress like no other. You can call as we go. There's great Collingwood and Carlton messages. I'll plant a few more and take you through them. And citing great messages of the past, Ron's text through, Jack Dyer hated Collingwood so much he didn't even watch black and white TV. That is so much part of folklore.
I've heard that one a few times.
Yes, that's true. So the Collingwood experience, so sort of what's in you, those road trips.
Mm.
So I can vividly recall a few, the elimination final at Footy Park, no one gave you a chance.
That was a qualifying final. First v. fourth.
Yep.
I didn't play that game, but it was one of the most disciplined team performances I've ever been a part of, and I was in the stand.
Yes.
It was a great effort. But yeah.
Most recently, the trip to Perth to face the Eagles in an elimination final, given no chance.
In 2020. I think they become self-fulfilling, and you're always looking for those. We were just talking about ebbs and flows in teams and your capacity, you know, that you're going to have emotional dips and rises psychologically up and down and physically, clearly. I mean, we've got the COVID situation at the moment. You know, guys, I've never heard coaches talk about the sickness or illness that is in their group more now than before. And I think it's a little bit about trusting their players to be like being open and honest, but then trusting them that they won't use that as a crutch.
Yep.
The coaches never used to do that. You'd never give your players an out, or at least, you know, through my playing days, it was always harder is better. But you'd never really sweep some stuff under the carpet that everyone knew was there, but you just would never talk about it and you never want to use it as an excuse. Craig McRae came out a couple of weeks ago and said, we're professionals. Doesn't matter if you're a little bit under the weather, you've still got to reach the level. But I think what we do is, and we were talking about Collingwood's travel history, and there has been some awesome performances. And I felt that as a player, and it was part of our psyche that, like, it was hit and run. It was get in there and get out, and you're in enemy territory. There's going to be you want silence coming over the fence because you've come out and you smacked him in the nose, and it was getting in there and getting the job done. And we, as a club, as a team, as a player or a coach, I felt it. We felt like we were able to build the opportunity into those situations. And it might only be one or two in a year. Collingwood only travel four or five times, but one or two of them would be real sort of marquee opportunities. And sometimes it'll be when our momentum was going the other way and we needed to build it back. And clearly that was what it looked like for Collingwood on the weekend. And I'm arm's length. I'm way away from it. But it looked the same and felt the same to me, which was great.
Isn't it interesting how it would pass through? So from the Malthouse years to the Buckley years to the McRae years, but it's just something in the walls.
Yeah, we've got Penderbury and Adams through the middle.
Yep.
Who have been there for a long time. Sidebottom on the wing. You've got Howe out the back, who's driven it and lived it as much as any in the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, Darcy Moore next to him, who's starting to bring that through as well. And you've got a group of young guys that are, oh, is that what it is? And this is what it feels like. And this is where the upside is. And if you're thinking positively about your outcomes and you believe in a good result, that's half the battle. So if you can see it and feel it and you've had evidence of it in the past, and then the people that are leading you around the place reminding themselves and you about it, well, then possibility is what creates the outcome. So it is a mindset, and it does become self-fulfilling. And I think that different clubs have got some different clubs have got different versions of it. I still think Geelong going back to GMHBA and playing their home games against all comers is still an advantage that they have and have created against the rest of the competition. And it sort of becomes self-fulfilling. So it buffers momentum, or it kicks momentum on for them across the season, which is so crucial for teams. I wonder how Gold Coast going to Darwin in the next couple of weeks is going to be for them. Can they turn that into, in the next 5 or 6 years, can they turn that into a momentum starter rather than a momentum flattener? I don't know, but that's going to be about their psyche. And if they're going to continue that, and you know, I don't see no reason why they shouldn't, but why wouldn't you try and get that psyche around it? When Richmond went to Cairns for a while, that was a momentum sapper and an energy sapper, and they couldn't get positivity around it, so they canned it. Great decision. Stop going somewhere where it makes you feel bad, or when you lose, or when you don't perform well. So I think we're always looking for that as teams and clubs. And the coaches need to be on the same page as the administrators. Let's look for opportunities where we can put things in our schedule, or that we're actually that are going to zap us up rather than lose our energy.
Nathan Buckley gets us underway on a Tuesday. A lot of your thoughts. 0433 98 11 16. Temper a mattress like no other. You can call 1300 736 736. This is Waitley for Red Energy. Moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy. And introducing Staria Load, the van that's huge on safety.
There's been some talk, so we'll just sort of keep pushing on there. But, you know, we've had a few chats through the season, so we'll just keep talking about that and let it take care of itself. The length will be worked out and the numbers will be worked out, but we're just, you know, chatting at the moment, going through that. But, you know, what we're trying to build is, you know, a team that's, you know, working for each other, and the environment's just as important as what happens out on the field, and trying to create that is really important. And we've got some really good people at our football club, not just, you know, the coach, it's the people around you that make it as well.
Brett Ratten, the St Kilda coach, with us on 360 last night. He is in a position of strength to be re-signed.
Yeah, well, yeah, and these are conversations that actually detract from the focus of what you're doing, which is playing good footy and building that culture he's talking about inside. So it actually, when you focus on an individual within that, it can take the focus off other areas. So it's not, this is the reality, but it's not ideal. Like, you just want to be able to announce these things and then move them on. But he's coaching well. Who would really know? You so from the outside in, you're looking and you're saying, well, they're playing really good footy. They're making the most of what they've got. They're finding different ways to buffer against, you know, players that aren't there. Their system is standing up against all comers at the moment. So he and Brett Ratten and his coaching group are actually doing a good job to, you know, relationships with the players and they're moving along really well. Mm. You spoke to me off air. I want to ask you about watching the 63 free kicks.
Yep.
And it's obviously, you know, like umpiring focuses. This can be a little bit. This can go down in different ways. Go down the rabbit warren. But so you watch them. What did you take out of the 63 free kicks from Hawthorn Brisbane and the performance of the umpires, yep, or the effect on the game?
So I thought the game survived fine. So there were too many, instinctively watching it in real time, there were too many free kicks, but the game, I think it was one of the best games of the season. High scoring, intense pressure right to the wire. So the game survived regardless of, so this is why, so I said yesterday, don't give me your generics, give me specifics. So I thought, well, I'll live that. I went into Fox and I spent the hour going through all the clips. So here's what I would say to you. 63 free kicks. 28 were instant free kicks. Right. No question. No quibble. High 100%. Contact, pushing the back, holding the ball, holding the man, insufficient intent, ran too far. The whole gamut is there. Garden variety, 28, straight up and down.
Is 28 out of 63 a good? You've still got 35.
No, it's not a great. Okay. That's not enough,
yep,
as a starting point. But so take those off the table.
So you've got 35 left.
There are 13 that I would just say are a straight no, on the basis of they were either wrong,
yep,
or they weren't consistent with what we see across the bulk of football. And this game was abnormally high. Why? Well, these 13, I think, fall into that category. Unwarranted holding the man, which you get from, yep, time to time. Incorrect holding the ball, which is a regular.
Yep.
A push when a player fell over. So it felt like whenever players went to ground, the whistle blew.
Yep.
And when you look at them more forensically, you go, no, that there wasn't an infringement there. The holding the man against Harris Andrews is sort of the emblematic one. In the marking contest, what was being searched for, Mitch Lewis gets the free kick and it's just not there. There are three.
So 13 of 63. So we're talking at, what are we looking at there? Around sort of 18%, 20%.
Should taken those straight out. The three that become the firestorm are the prohibited contacts, which is Neil's forearm to the chest of Newcomb, Mitchell pushing over Pryor, and the tickle to Newcomb's chin, which results in a free. They typically aren't paid. So once you start blowing the whistle for those, you open up the too pedantic, the over-front point. So they're in the 13.
Yep.
Then there are 22 that I bracketed either into probable, maybe, or marginal. And this is the eternal debate within the game, is these 22 free kicks. Technically, if you want to justify them, I think you can. But I don't think that's the right way to approach it as a coaching mechanism.
Do you agree with the question of the game should be umpired the way that you would umpire it in a grand final? Do you like that concept?
Because I like
when that comes through, it just makes sense to me.
Yeah. The problem with that is the best three umpires are there that day and they can be trusted to do that, broadly speaking. Your broad group, I suspect not every umpire is capable of being given that instruction. Mm. I reckon our best decision makers are excellent umpires, and there would be a core of, 8 to 10? Mm. And they can be trusted with whatever direction you give them. Serve the game. The rest, I think the larger group is why we have so many layers and so many almost protection mechanisms built in and layer upon layer on how to interpret, because they're still learning it and trying to get better at it.
Well, so, I think that the and that speaks to potentially the reason for the dissent rule and the idea of respect for umpires, because that speaks to how many young people actually want to do that role in our grassroots. And so I get the bigger sense of what the AFL are trying to focus on and trying to build, because you need to build the base to be able to build the quality at the top. And it's not going to happen with the click of the fingers. It's tough times that we're going through to build that base around, I suppose, the average umpiring performance.
Mm. And those 22 debatable free kicks, the quibble. And in a way, that's the heart of the game, is do you want those paid? Do you not want them paid? I think on a standard day, 2/3 of them get paid and 1/3 don't. It felt like they all got paid in this game. And suddenly you end up with 63 rather than the 44 average, which is up on the 38 average from last year. So the game has moved to pay more free kicks.
Do you, so if you had to boil it down, you had to look at it really closely. How many decisions? So would you say that was 13 too many?
I think you could take the 13 off the table straight away and reduce it to 50.
So 13 still, that's three decisions a quarter.
Yep. And then in the 22, I think in the standard flow of things, usually 1/3 of those don't get paid. So, and that's how you get an abnormal game, which would be a really interesting challenge, I think, to review and to coach within their own department. Don't worry about the public side of it. What's the lesson to be learnt out of where this game got to?
Look, I think any discussion around umpires, I think, should end with that they are really appreciated. They're not perfect. They're going to make blues, and I don't know how much they absorb and listen. Because if you were a footballer or a high performer of any sort, and listened to everything that everyone had to say about you, it's bloody hard. You're being judged all the time. But
you'd walk away from it.
Well, that's the thing. I think when
and that's no good.
And there will be some umpires there that are that might be out of form. And sort of feeling, geez, I need a little bit more support here, and my performance will only go up if my strengths are acknowledged.
And there are a lot who are absent at the moment as well.
It's a tough gig.
Bucks, good to see you.
Cheers, Joe.